Thank you very much. Hi, other room. Have a stopwatch to keep me on track here. Okay. Thank you so much, Joan and Jimmy. I feel odd saying it's a blast from the past to be back at Hemingway, but it kind of feels like it is. But many of you were here before me, so you probably think that's ridiculous. But anyway, thank you very much for saying such kind things about me. So I'm actually in the middle of working with Tamika Cage Conley and a bunch of other lovely teaching artists in a hugely chaotic teaching sprint, which is why me and my husband, who also has a work deadline tonight, have to leave halfway. So after David, unfortunately, we have to leave. But anyway, this chaos has inspired me. Usually I'm a big planner. Plan everything, make plans for the plans. But what I did to pick these poems out was I took a giant folder that says publications 2014 to present, and it was a huge sheaf of poems. I pulled things at random, and I pulled them, and I'm going to read them in the order that I pulled them. So actually, it's kind of nice, though, because it's like a celebration of the journals and the poems, because it makes me think about each one and how great and supportive that they've been to me. So first of all, I started freaking out about turning 40, which is how old I am, when I was turning 39. So December 2nd, when I turned 39, it was like a clock counting down. And I wrote this poem called 39 Ways to Disappear. Because I saw a Facebook ad, and this Facebook ad said, women who die alone do this one weird thing. Now, no way was I going to click on that, but of course, I'm turning 40 and I'm thinking about dying alone with my cat eating my face. And so, you know, the poem happens. So anyway, around the time of my 40th birthday, so a December passes, and then there's another December, one of my dream journals, Arsenic Lobster, which I remember thumbing through my Poets Market and saying, one day I will be published there. They picked this poem up, so I'm so grateful. 39 Ways to Disappear. Women who die alone do this one weird thing. Women die alone in cardboard boxes. Women die alone gardening, caressing herb rub into the lamb because of how the house bumped and wailed during a storm beneath the Japanese plum tree, surrounded by vertebrae, inhaling engine smoke along the edge of the wharf in the thoughts of scoundrels atop the roof with a drink on the side table, orbiting the moon from psychological violence. Women die alone, drawn close to the heater vent. She was found dead, surrounded by the shell of a gun fetish, pondering the recoil, having swallowed a battery, clutching her book bag, in the basement of a skyscraper by a next-door farmer from debt aboard an aircraft after hanging in a gray suit with pale blue pinstripes because of microchips. She was found dead with a plate of bread and sweet tea. I will be found in a lunar lander by a vegetable vendor, having swallowed my tongue with all the nodes of my insomnia, despite the humidity, with my orbital bone smashed in over his absence, with my mouth full of cake inside a cute dress, following a vein no one knew about, surrounded by wool carpet in the hall, my body fast letting go of warmth. This poem was published by The Knickknackery, and it's from my second manuscript in progress, full-length Failure to Thrive, about my response to my mother's suicide. This is from a series of nightmares I had after the fact. It's called Aspects of the Dream Are Aspects of the Dreamer, number two. It's very hard with the position of the mic to read to this room, and I don't want to neglect you, because some of my people are over here. There's David St. John, there's my husband, I think there's Joe Colin back there, but I don't know, there you are. There's Sheila and Sheila, and like everybody's here, and I don't want to ignore you. Okay. Aspects of the Dream. Aspects of the Dreamer, Aspects of the Dreamer, number two. There's silverware in the trees, pots and pans weigh down the low branches of the post oaks. She's hung whisks, metal teardrops, deflated shapes knocked together, manic kudzu. My feet snag, here's the entrance to her trailer inside a mouth of vines. I hear that metal rattle again and look up. She's rigged a sort of awning, knives pointed downward, cleaver, parer, deboning. Bent screen door almost comes off in my hand when I push the latch. Inside is dim, and my feet slog over the mauve carpet she hates. It's swampy in here with no AC and the blinds drawn. On the TV, an ad man shills rare coins. My mother's perched on the couch, dying properly, wrapped like a mole beast in a baby blue blanket. One claw protrudes. I just got a Best of the Net nomination from Pretty Owl Poetry for this poem. It's called The Agnostic Addresses Dog, and it features Dr. Dog, a protagonist in a chapbook that is circulating, chapbook manuscript as yet unpublished, still circulating, called Chance Operations. The Agnostic Addresses Dog. One, neurochemicals have guided me to these foothills. They look like the buried backs of dinosaurs. How to interpret this muddled sky? Cirrus contrails cursive all through its vividness. Two, if I were ice, falling with no haste through space, if my rough sphere were distracted by your gravity, if my center disintegrated while being dragged toward you by a force I only half understood. Three, we hold this quantum thread between us, maybe? How long for the weather inside my head to break? Four, it's getting harder to focus on you. I gotta lie in bed long enough to still the quake in my lungs. No, wait, there's six sections and you gotta listen to them all. But thank you. Number five, my haunts pin my shoulders to the bed, put their hands over my mouth. In it, they tongue my face, leave their atmosphere everywhere on me, and if I believed, you could say stop, and it would stop, but you are ineffable. No. Thanks. I forgot to write down where this poem was published. Somewhere a journal is weeping from about my disloyalty. Somewhere a journal is not thinking at all about me. Okay, this is the first poem in Suites for the Modern Dancer. I had an editor to help me with this book, and she asked me, after we did this whole manuscript, and it was brilliant and beautiful, and the last poem, she asked me, it was the most beautiful thing I ever made. She said, you need one more thing. You need to open it and write a poem that is essentially the origin story of your blindness. And I was like, crap. Okay. And because I don't want to talk about it. And this is what came out. Cranial nerve 2. The optic nerve. If the axon thicket does not flourish, the child will be irreversibly blind. And the kingdom weeps. Say, lack of thread. Make it a romance. Say, dead, just dead. Moonless sky. Say, hypoplasia. In the coppice waits a deer. He rubs his antlers on a tree. Say, usually correlated with other central nervous system defects. Grew up near a river alongside the thalamus. We are waiting for our girl in a white robe with feathers. Girl with a knapsack stepping off a cliff. Girl with a picnic basket containing cake and wine. Girl with the face of a honey-colored dog. Girl on the cover of a charity website who looks like me. Say, she was one of the lucky ones. Say, she wasn't one of the lucky ones. The huntsman took scissors, cut open the mother's belly. Girl wakes up in a spare circle of saplings, ask, can she see? Thank you. This poem is very special to me because it was published in Stirring, which is a journal, one of the longest running online literary journals at 20 years old now. And this started off my relationship with Sundress, who took Sweets for the Modern Dancer. Lovely, lovely people down there in Knoxville. This poem is also special to me because it is essentially a love poem for my husband who took care of me in my tremendous and crushing grief after my mother passed. It's called Critical Tension. It's also in sections, and there are how many sections? Wait for it. Oh, four sections. Okay. Critical Tension, 1. What seems secure doesn't stay that way. A wind topples the easel. The cat destroys the rose petal by petal. The strut breaks from a heavy weight. Eroded mortar makes the bricks collapse, or bricks collapse because of an implosion. A crowd has gathered to watch the implosion. Some are shooting video. The implosion has a website. 2. In my grief, it takes me a year to relearn these skills. 1. Leave house. 2. Take bus to store. 3. Read list. 4. Shop for items on list. 5. Return to house. 3. I could fall at least 10 feet. 2 stories up is survivable. I hear. How many stories are not survivable? 4. The door is alarmed. A keypad, a code. I hear you from a height. I hear you calling my name from a height. While I examine my knife, I hear you naming me. You flash some documentation, perhaps a ring. I feel you through a fog, your hands on my shoulders. I can't break the code. I slam my fist into the keypad. I cut the yellow wire and the red wire and the blue wire. Okay, and this is my last poem. This also makes me very happy because it's going to be published in Gargoyle this fall, which is another journal that I said, oh, when I'm a grown-up, I really want to be published in Gargoyle. And so It will come to pass. Also from the Chance Operations chapbook featuring Dr. Dog. Sonnet for Ambien. Dr. Dog said this dub would make me slide. Instead, it's 2 a.m. and I'm fastened to the balustrade. Everything tastes good. I lick the firmament, touch fingertips with my maker, rock in this bandstand, altitude buzz. I laugh delicious at all the mayflies I've decreed don't matter. Maybe I'll stay the winter after all. A firecrack espresso to sip, smoke in the snow, while giant birds flap their spiral wings en route to royalist shootouts or trauma wards. My single cell is comfortable, small enough to fill a platter with portent. A single chevron blights this daughter. Flame eats paper. Flash, flash. I'm here. Thanks.